Welcome to episode 291 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on July 15th, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, we talk about Wednesday troubleshooting issues. It starts with bandwidth issues and bandwidth caps, and then moves into permission wrangling with Microsoft Graph, and wraps up with conditional access in Azure AD and issues with Windows activation. Here we are, Scott. Friday the 15th.
Live from New York. It is Saturday night now.
Wrong
show.
Although, are you going on that show? Are you trying to tell me something, Scott?
No, but you know where I am going? In a couple of weeks, it's my anniversary.
Congratulations. So
my wife and I are going to, I don't know, my wife hasn't left me yet. Maybe she'll leave me after this one, but we are going to Boston just for the weekend. But there's an Elton John concert in town. So I totally scored tickets to an Elton John concert. And we're going to go see that at Foxborough.
Fun. That sounds like a good time.
Should be.
We just had our anniversary, and you know what we did? We went out for dinner.
Hopefully you went out without the kids, and hopefully you built some Legos without the kids present. Like that feels like a good anniversary for you.
So we did go out. We went to a local place out by the beach for dinner, and yeah, we did not do anything nearly as extravagant as Boston. We need to get our kids a little bit older before I think I'll be able to convince my wife to leave them for a weekend.
Your kids are old enough to leave for a weekend,
well,
trust me.
So one of us would say that. The problem is I also don't know that our primary babysitter is, well, when we're gone, our primary babysitter is my in-laws. And they, I don't know that they would want all four for a long weekend yet. That is the other dilemma. So,
gotcha.
We'll get them a little older.
A couple of things to work on. You got to get your wife to let go of the kids. You've got to make the kids more palatable to your in-laws. Like, you've got some work to do, but I think you can come up with a solid work back plan. You know, you track some tasks in Planner on a Kanban board. You show everybody that burn down chart.
Set some dependencies in there so I know exactly when we can actually go away for a long weekend and we'll be good.
You know what else
I worked on, Scott? Today,
What demons did you wrestle with today?
So I was actually talking to somebody. I have a bandwidth cap. Apparently not everybody has bandwidth caps yet. I have a bandwidth cap on my internet, on my home internet.
This is one of those weird things I really struggled with when I moved to Florida is bandwidth caps. I don't know who your provider is. Mine is Comcast, and Comcast is very bad, evil, and by default, they have a terabyte bandwidth cap, which you think like, oh my gosh, a terabyte, I can't go through that. You know, I work from home all the time. I sometimes do testing where it's like, oh, I've got to upload a couple terabytes of data to a storage account and then download it and just push stuff all around just to test scale and things. So between that and everything streamed in the house, I have two teenagers in the house. My wife comes home and starts streaming like everything on her phone. I've got TikTok going 24/7. Like it is very easy to blow through a terabyte.
Right.
Nothing. Like halfway through the month, you can go like, I'm done. I pay the VIG to Comcast to have unlimited. It's like an extra $30 or $40 a month. And I hate paying it, but it's a price that must be paid.
So I've avoided it. I have Comcast and I have AT&T as a failover. Both have 1 terabyte. And I've actually been able to split it out. So I have the family, all the streaming, everything they do is on AT&T. All my work stuff is on Comcast. So in essence, as long as the internet's balanced out and our usage is balanced out, I really have 2 terabytes of data. Well, I flipped and I was waiting for an update. So I have a UniFi Dream Machine Pro. They didn't have the ability to split out the internet like that until recently. About halfway through last month, I realized they added the ability, so I split the internet out. I blew through my 1 terabyte on the family data cap last month by like 600 gigs. of download.
Yeah, but at least you get to go over like once or twice. You just start out with, I have a bandwidth problem, and then you go, I really don't have a problem because I went over and, you know, most of them have a forgiveness thing the first few times. That was my problem with Comcast, is I was going over consistently every single month, and you pay whatever, $20 for every 50 gigs that you're over, which is just ridiculous. So, yeah.
So we rolled over, and I was like, okay, fine. Last month, it's okay. Maybe there was something. I don't know what we did last month. So I just went to check mine again because we just flipped over like within the last couple of days. I'm at like 500 gigs already this month. And that led me down a rabbit hole. What in the world is going on with my internet, and what is sucking up all this bandwidth? So I jumped over to my router. I was watching it in the Unify. I am pulling a steady 25 megabit per second download over my AT&T internet. Like, there is no fluctuation. It's just stuck at 50% utilization nonstop. The kids are watching TV. I went, they turned it off. It didn't stop. I rebooted my Raspberry Pi running Home Assistant, and my internet dropped to zero.
So let's just take a step back real quick. Can you just, for those that aren't familiar with Home Assistant, can you just kind of give like the 50,000 foot overview of what that is? And then we can talk about how in no way, shape, or form should Home Assistant be causing 25 megabits a second of ingress into your abode.
Ingress internet. So Home Assistant is I would essentially say it's a customized Linux distro that you can run on a plethora of things, but it controls smart homes. So that's where all my light switches, my lights, the doorbell, all of that is wired into Home Assistant. And part of the reason I like Home Assistant is it's all local. It's running on a Raspberry Pi. It's sitting in a closet here, and everything's running over the local internet. I'm not even using none of my cameras are cloud-based. They're Unify cameras, so it's all local. All the storage for those is local. There is nothing other than remote access to my smart home stuff that could potentially be using the internet. Like, I shouldn't be pulling anything from the internet on a consistent basis. The only thing I could think of, and this is, I went down this rabbit hole. I was like, what in here is pulling the internet? I have embedded a GIF of the weather radar on a couple of my dashboards. Only thing I could think of was this image of the radar. I pulled those off, and that was it. Somehow, some way, a radar from, I've played with a couple different ones, so I had a couple different ones on there. Somehow this GIF or this radar or something was trying to download little like 480 by 640 pixel GIFs of the radar and managing to consume 24 megabits a second nonstop, pulling down these little GIFs.
That is impressive.
It really is. The fact that it was even able to sustain that. So I still don't know why. And this brings me back to one of my beefs with Unify. I could see that it was a massive amount of SSL TLS traffic coming into the Raspberry Pi. I knew it was that device. I knew it was pulling a ton of traffic, but there's nothing in the Unify Dream Machine or anything that I could find that tells you like the URL or the endpoint that your traffic is coming from. So I didn't have any reporting to be able to see, oh, it's this URL. It's coming from AccuWeather or something trying to pull down this radar. So it really was like, go start turning stuff off, deleting stuff, reconfiguring stuff, until I could see that throughput drop off on my Dream Machine.
That's a weird one. You know, like one of the things you can do with Home Assistant, I don't know if you've done this at all, but you should be able to do it with your Unifies will do it. Yeah, because the Unifies, they emit SNMP messages. Uh-huh. So you can have like an SNMP trap on the Unify that then is like aggregated on a Home Assistant dashboard. So you could have seen all your bandwidth being sucked up in real time, but it still wouldn't have helped you kind of solve your underlying problem. That's an interesting one for like, what do you monitor for outbound communications and how does that go? Like, I'm trying to think of how I would solve that in my house, and I be sitting here going, well, I don't know, maybe I can't do it from the router, but I have to fall back to Pi-hole and just watch like DNS traffic and see if there's like an aggregation of calls to, you know, a given cluster of URIs from some individual client or set of clients or things like that.
Yeah, that was mine. And like I route it through a custom DNS server. So I could go and I started going down that path of trying to figure out through looking at different DNS requests what it was going to. And there wasn't anything there that was immediately available. And there's so many DNS requests between, same thing, all of the devices here, that it was a little bizarre and also frustrating that I couldn't, that it took so long to figure it out today.
Yeah, but it sounds like you got it figured out. So now you just, your fix is to leave Home Assistant off?
Well, so no, Home Assistant is back on, but the radar, I no longer have, well, I switched. There's still something going on with the radar because you'd have to go into the details of how Home Assistant and radar work and how I had to embed this. I can't actually delete the smart devices that are essentially the radar. I think there was something with an update and some configurations that changed, and like I have some stuff that's stuck in my configuration, but I was able to disable all of them. So I still have these two weather radars. They're disabled. They're not on any dashboards. And by watching my network traffic, I know that's enough to prevent my bandwidth consumption. And then I was able to drop a different radar on there. So I am using a different radar. Well, I'm going to have to keep an eye on it though. But I'm like out of bandwidth for the month already and I'm only 2 days in.
Yeah, you know what? Just run an Ethernet cord to the neighbor's house next door. Start just leeching off them for a little bit. Let them use your pool or something. It'll be fine.
Well, they just put in a pool, so I can't do that anymore. They just go to their own pool.
You're going to have to threaten them. Take away cul-de-sac parties or something, you know?
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, I can go to my device and look and like the amount of bandwidth or the amount of data it consumed over the last few days was absolutely absurd. So, I don't know. But that is not Office 365 or Azure related, but it was most of my day today was trying to figure out how not to have like a $200 internet bill because I already used my 1 month of overages.
Well, we'll check in a month. We'll see how you're doing and if you're back on track.
So that is, so the other, this has been a day of troubleshooting stuff for me. So I had another one I troubleshooted that is absolutely Office 365 related. And it's actually related to a video we did earlier this week. So Wednesday night, we did our YouTube stream. We went over the Microsoft Graph. If you're curious in watching that, one, I still need to edit some. You'll see a little bit, or To the Cloud YouTube channel will have a bit of that. If you want to see the full episode, that's one of the new things we're doing with our whole membership side of the podcast, is you can go watch the whole, I don't know, it was like 45 minutes, hour long stream where we demoed a bunch of stuff, went over that conversion from Azure AD PowerShell to Microsoft Graph PowerShell, showed a bunch of stuff like that, setting up scopes. So today, I had an issue related to scopes. I'm trying to write some PowerShell for resetting a user's password. So go run some PowerShell, call the Microsoft Graph, and as a part of that call to the graph, reset a password. If you go look at the documentation, and we can throw a few of these links in the show notes as well, but if you go look at the documentation, there's a documentation map that shows you what you should use for what you used to use in the Azure AD PowerShell and what you should use in Microsoft Graph PowerShell now instead. If you go look at those, there are, I'm flipping through all of my screenshot. There are two different mappings. So there's an old update-Azure AD signed in user password, and that is translates to update-mg user password. There's also set-azure AD user password goes to update-mg user. So if you were going to go write a PowerShell script that you could run against any user and reset their password, which one of those would you use, Scott?
I would use the former because it says it's going to reset the password of the user.
The signed in user password versus the set Azure AD or set Azure AD user password?
Oh, I guess latter. The latter.
The latter one, the set Azure AD user password.
Yeah.
So that's what we thought. It maps to update-mg user. If you go look at update-mg user, it says you need the directory read-write-all scope for update-mg user. And this is something new with all of the Graph PowerShell, is you have to set scope, set permissions, so you can do what you want to. Update-mg user, that's what it said it needed. We gave it read-write-all. And lo and behold, we can't reset a password with it. We were getting authorization failures.
I would pretend I'm surprised, but
you're really not.
I'm not.
So come to find out, if you go dive in, and I would say from anybody learning this, you really do need to go kind of understand the graph. If you go look at the developer documentation for the Microsoft graph and for resetting passwords, you will find that there is a couple additional scopes. And I think you can do it with either one of these scopes. I haven't gotten to the point of testing both of them yet, but there is a scope that is user authentication method dot read write all. And there's also a scope that is... not that scope. There's also a scope that is directory.access.as.user.all. And this is another one of those. Two different documentations actually give two different examples for resetting passwords. And that's why I think both of those will work. We ended up using directory.access.as.user.all and then that update MG user password or update MG user commandlet works for resetting passwords. I think user authentication method.read.write.all will work as well. But we have come to find out through working through this today that even though these different commandlets give certain scopes, if there's additional functionality, such as resetting a password within there, what they give you as scopes that are required for these different commandlets may not always be 100% accurate.
There's an interesting thing there. If you go and look at the permissions reference for the graph and what you've mentioned there, all the user authenticated method scopes, so anything that starts with user authenticated method, whether it's .read, .read-write, any of those things, they're all in preview.
Really?
Yeah. So from a permissions perspective, any permissions that you see in the portal, those are all generally available. They're GA status for everything to be used. But the permissions that are in preview, while they're available to the public, they can certainly be changed. They may or may not be promoted to GA status, anything like that. So talk about a moving target that there's a permission requirement for a preview permission. Yeah. That's a fun one.
It's definitely a little bizarre. And I think it reiterates, and we talked about this a little bit on the video when we did it the other day, is as administrators, if we're going to use this MG graph and with Azure AD being deprecated, well, I know it isn't always our favorite thing. And I'm not always a fan of reading all the documentation about graph permissions and understanding how the graph works. It is going to be more and more important as IT pros, admins writing PowerShell with this Microsoft graph to understand some of these permission scopes and how it all works.
I don't know how you're supposed to understand them when they're not documented, but that's just me.
It's true.
Maybe I'm being weird.
Or when the documentation conflicts. Or when there's two commandlets.
But I guess in that case, it is kind of nice that the developer documentation you said does have that. I imagine did you try going to like Graph Explorer, or just running like a straight REST API call to the graph to see if it gave you a more verbose error message, like some type of authorization error? Because at that point you've authenticated. So I'd imagine it should have to come back with some type of like, hey, you're missing this permission kind of thing.
Yeah, I did not try it with Graph Explorer.
I wonder, just like while you're talking through it, I want to hop over to the Explorer and see if they have, let's see, they do have a patch command for update user. which is what you'd be doing in update MG user.
Yep.
And the cool thing about Graph Explorer, for those that haven't done it, there's a little tab in Graph Explorer for any operation where you've got typically like the request body, the request headers, and then there's a modify permissions tab that pops up, which shows you all the permissions and admin consents that you will need. And interesting enough, like even the Graph Explorer doesn't call it out. That has directory read write all, user.managedidentities.all, user.readwrite.all, and device management, but nothing about user authentication method.
It's like it's because of subset. So you end up passing in to do it with issue, do the PowerShell commandlet to do it as update-mg user, pass it the user ID, and then pass it body parameters. And in those body parameters, you can do the password profile, force change password on the next sign-in, true or false, and then what you want the password to be. And we would run that update MG user, and all we would get back is update MG user _ update, insufficient privileges to complete the operation.
Very descriptive.
Yeah, it was not very helpful.
Can I just say, you know, another unintuitive thing there too. So when I think user ID, like this one always throws me off with the graph stuff, is I think of UPNs or aliases. So, you know, and like I'm, you know, Scott at mscloud.itpro.com, but in fact, the user ID for a lot of these commandlets, it's a string, which is the GUID of the user ID in AED.
Yes. And I think with this one, I was trying to look some of these, and I would say it's hit or miss with groups and users and teams and all of that. Sometimes user ID can be the UPN or the GUID or the GUID or the object ID or whatever you want to call it. So sometimes it will take both. Even though it says user ID, it'll take UPN or the object ID. Some of them, it's exactly what you said. It's always the object ID. And then you have to go do something like get MG user and then pass in a search or a query based on the UPN or based on the name or something like that to get the user object back, just so you can get the ID out of it and pass it into your next commandlet.
Yeah, it really is a thing of beauty.
And then naturally, all these different modules decide to use different query languages. I feel like they're all starting to standardize around like a OData query, but I know I was working with one, PNP, the PNP PowerShell. We've talked about that before too. Working with SharePoint, they still use CAML queries. I had to write a CAML query the other day. I was so irritated.
I think I would have had an aneurysm. That's still a thing. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've written a CAML query. Is like CAML Explorer still a thing? Do they still have all that?
You know what? I don't even know. But the SharePoint list views still absolutely use CAML query. And yeah, get PNP, I think it's get PNP list items. I had to pass in a query to get certain items from a SharePoint list, and I had to write my whole CAML query to get those list items. Oh.
Yeah, look, they have a whole sample for it. Read SharePoint list items using a CAML query. That's impressive and horrible and very scary all at the same time.
Yes. I had those same feelings. I was like, oh, why? Fortunately, I still remembered more about CAML queries than I thought I did. Those are two of my troubleshooting. Do you want to hear my third troubleshooting? I'm on a troubleshooting spree today.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at intelligink.com/podcast. That's intelligink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business. All right. So next troubleshooting, working with another client, and we helped them deploy a bunch of devices using Autopilot. So got the devices, got them enrolled, sent them to the users. They logged in and everything seemed to be working fine. It was working great. Within the last week or two, there's two or three of them that all of a sudden have started getting error messages about Windows 10 not being activated. And we're like, we deployed these with Autopilot. They have Windows 365 E5 licenses. They have everything they need. And I'm going to preface this with, we're still not 100% sure what's going on. We're getting a bunch of errors that appear to have something to do with the key management service and failing to query the key management service or a DNS issue, something goofy like that. But in the course of troubleshooting this, it led us to another article today that I found rather interesting, and that multi-factor authentication combined with conditional access can actually lead to an issue activating Windows 10. And it's an issue that was identified with hybrid Azure AD joined devices. It could be Azure AD joined devices and MFA, where the device doesn't successfully upgrade to the Windows Enterprise subscription license due to MFA. It looks like there might be a later version that has a patch, but there's a whole article out there about this, where if you maybe are experiencing a subscription activation issue with Windows 10, you may have to go into your conditional access policies that are enforcing MFA and actually exclude the Universal Store Service APIs and web application, as well as a certain app ID, and they just give a GUID for it in the documentation, for all the users and all the these, essentially for all the users that are using Windows 10, so that Windows 10 will actually successfully authenticate.
Yeah, that's a weird and funky one, right? Like, what is it in the store API that's causing failures in conditional access?
Yeah, like this one, I don't know that I can fully...
Why do you need to call the store API for activation?
Like, yeah. And I'm wondering, because it's pointing to a key management service, if somehow maybe that key management service, like, and we've been batting this around as... One of my contractors and I have been working through this is Microsoft running a key management service behind Windows 365? And it's an issue with that. Do we have a bad config on these Windows 10 devices? We don't think it's a firewall or something, because I think all these devices are in different locations. But it's just a little bit of an odd one. And then seeing this article about MFA and conditional access and having issues activating Windows 10. Yeah, it was a little odd.
That one's new to me. I mean, it's a good find. It's a weird one. So when you talk about KMS in general, so Azure VMs need to have line of sight to Azure KMS. That's been a thing for a while. And if you don't have line of sight, like if you block outbound connections and you're explicitly denying access to those KMS servers, regardless of like whatever your licensing status is, right? You have mobility or whatever, and you're allowed to activate those licenses, like hybrid usage rights. Yep. That's still a no-no. Like you have to be able to connect to those KMS endpoints. And that's pretty well documented. I'll put a link in the show notes to the whole Azure KMS endpoints, what they are, how they work, the requirements, even when you've got like site-to-site VPNs or you're doing forced tunnels, things like that. Like there's potentially configuration for you just to connect to like all the core KMS servers that sit out there. But for things that don't sit in Azure, like if I'm just on a device that you like ship to me, right? Like maybe I'm doing like a zero touch deployment and I just want to be hybrid AD joined, like you send me a laptop.
Right.
That has nothing to do with Azure KMS.
Yeah. And this is weird. So the error that they're getting to, I have a screenshot, is that they were unable to activate Windows because the KMS client cannot find the KMS SRV resource in DNS. And it's like, well, we don't know. Like, is Windows 365 reaching out to a KMS server that's in DNS for Office 365 somewhere, which we have no control over? Is there a firewall somehow blocking it? But all three of these laptops are using different ISPs in different cities. They're not even like on the same network, which is why we maybe suspected MFA.
Well, it's a good thing you did, right? Like enough banging your head against the wall and putting the quotes in the right place on the error string in your search engine of choice brought you to that wonderfully documented troubleshooting section of what is a much larger article.
Oh, man. It has been one of those days, but that is what I've been up to. So if anybody's ever had any issues with Windows 10 or 11's activation with Microsoft 365, has any other insights at this point in time? It could still be this. I also know conditional access policies can take a few hours to update at times. So we're also in a little bit of that. And this is a challenge. I mean, in general with the cloud, I've had this a few times, is at what point in time do you make a change and wait a day to make another change? Because when you talk to Microsoft and read stuff, they really don't guarantee anything to take full effect for less than 24 hours. Every time it's like, well, it could take up to 24 hours. It could take up to 24 hours. And coming from on-prem, you're not used to having to always wait 24 hours. Like you can run a GP update or you can push a firewall change and test stuff immediately. When you make a change like this, you really don't want to go in and make 10 changes or you have no idea what it is because you don't 100% know when certain stuff is going to apply.
Yeah, the whole propagation of changes through like in the case of Azure AD, as a global service, like you're really talking about like sometimes configuration changes that need to be pushed across an entire geo. In the US for a long time, like Azure AD was hosted out of South Central and there's all sorts of like legacy things that come to like South Central US when it comes to Azure and Office 365 and Microsoft. Like it's where the initial instances of like RDFE were stood up. So like the old like Red Dog front end, and you can go read about like the history of Azure and all that. And there's still these legacy dependencies that exist there. But as the system evolves over time, so like Azure AD today, like you've seen it over the years where we've had like these outages and they turn into global outages. Like there was the lightning strike in South Central a couple of years ago, took down a DC.
We'll never forget that one.
There's some flooding. So that led to, okay, how do we improve, like we being Microsoft, how do you go about improving resiliency within the service? Well, you remove the dependencies on RDFE and you start to kind of turn it into more of a modern service. Like maybe you construct it the way ARM is constructed with this concept of regions, global availability, like all these kinds of things. So that brings down the long tail of you have to wait for stuff to happen and not necessarily stuff to happen even within like an individual service. Sometimes when you're making changes in Azure AD, you're affecting things like a device change, device management thing, like an Intune thing, ultimately has to propagate from Azure AD all the way down through Intune and potentially into a configuration within a set of tenants within whatever region your Office 365 tenancy actually happens to be home to.
Right. And I'm curious too, like with this, and I know we need to wrap up here in a second because we have meetings, but like when we go connect to this tenant and when you have employees all over the world or all over even a single country, you could potentially be making a configuration change in a tenant closer to you or one that you're in. And I'm imagining other users could be connecting to other endpoints that to your point, you didn't make the change in, and it has to propagate through all these different endpoints that all your different users are connecting to based on the physical location that these remote workers might be in.
Yes. Yeah. It's definitely a thing.
I know I've said it before, seeing the infrastructure and the behind the scenes of how all of this is architected at this scale would be absolutely fascinating to me.
Maybe I can pull together some links between this week and next week. Like, there actually is a lot that's public about how these services are kind of built and architected. You know, some of it's not the most up-to-date stuff. It certainly gives you an idea of some of the considerations that go into designing like distributed systems like this at scale, or at the scale of like a hypercloud provider.
Yeah. That would be incredibly interesting. We'll have to maybe pull together an episode on that. But with that, I can let you go. I'm going to go see what else I can find that needs to be, that I need to dive into the troubleshooting of today, because that is my day. And I will let you go to your meeting.
All right.
And enjoy your weekend.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Scott. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.